Everybody, I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work, the show designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death and life in other dimensions. Each week through our connection with our spirit friends we discuss topics of interest and take great pleasure in listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us. In the most natural way, we are able to cross the divide between our physical world and the non-physical world when my husband Mick deep trance channels an enlightened spirit called Gregory Hay, who can access great knowledge and wisdom from his position. So this week's show is another chance to either phone us with a question or maybe email us a topic or something like that at any time that you like in the week, and then I can put your questions to Gregory. It's not a reading style show. It's actually information, general information, metaphysical information, spiritual, physical earth matter, whatever it is that you think that you would like the spirit world's perspective on, basically. And it's toll free. If you want to phone in the US, it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. It's not toll free in international callers, but it's only a quick call, and it's 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work here live on bbsradio.com. Every Sunday at 10 a.m. PST, which is 1 p.m. EST and 6 p.m. GMT. GMT, yes.
You're doing
not
it as
GMT.
Well.
If you would like to know more about us, our books, our CDs, or maybe audio downloads or e-books, or maybe you would like to order an Akashic reading, please go visit our website, which is at www.spirit-teaching.com. Also, now we're live on www.spiritsworkradio.com and www.mickavery.com for those of you in Europe and the UK. Now, what we're able to do as spirit mediums is to offer you the spirit world's perspective on the nature of our existence. And when I go into the deep trance state, Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for an educational group in the spirit world called the White Cloud Group, will borrow my physical body for the whole of the show. I won't know about anything else that happens because my spirit and my consciousness are transported to somewhere else. Please do look at our websites for a better understanding of how we walk and work, and because we haven't got very much time to go into too much detail of the information at the beginning of each show, because it would take up just too much valuable time. So I'm going to say goodbye for this week. It should only take a few seconds, really, hopefully, before Gregory is here. And Sylvie is going to maintain the whole show and take any questions or ask any questions that you have written in prior to the reading, to the show. Or, of course, we'll help you if you do want to ring in. Okay, well, thanks, Anne. Bye.
Thanks, Nick. And Gregory will be here in a second, and he had an earth life 300 years ago, but has continued to learn and evolve in the spirit world. He comes to share his wisdom with us for our, I'm gonna get rid of this little, mixed up words that I have. And, I'm sure it's gonna be okay. Okay, that's that finished with. Anyway, the light white cloud group whom he represents were formed to bring us knowledge that will hopefully steer us toward a more peaceful and harmonious future. And they are made up of all kinds of scientific minds and scholars from all walks of life, as well as ordinary people. They help us to understand the mechanics of the universe and basically anything that we can think of that we are really stuck on, and they bring their insights so that we can discuss things that maybe we've been programmed to believe and hopefully emerge with a fresh point of view that is more applicable to our life now. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about. That's why they're here. So the questions that come, if you would like to give me enough for a whole show, then that's great. If you just have one or two questions, then that's fine too. Our Akashic readings that you can purchase online that we do anywhere in the world. We do telephone readings, audio readings, obviously if you're in the UK, which is where we are at the moment, and you can get to us and you can have a one-to-one. But basically it's to do with your spirituality, your spiritual pathway, your energy, your gifts, your guides, and basically marrying that in with your physical life now and helping you to make a positive step forward in your life, basically. So Gregory is very helpful in that way, and discovering what soul group you're from and who your doorkeeper is really very comforting to know, and discovering about you and your energy prior to coming here and having this physical life really does help you to maybe then, if you want to, hone into that energy and basically become more attuned to that, knowing that you have all of this insight and wisdom within you that you just need to tune into to help you in this life. So basically that's what the Akashic readings helps you with, amongst lots of other things. Obviously Gregory would answer your questions as well. And I do believe Gregory's here now. Hi, Gregory. I'm losing my voice. Sorry.
Hello, my dear friend. With love and light, blessings as ever, little bird.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so do you want to speak about anything, or do you want to go straight into the listeners' questions, because we've got plenty?
Yes, I do feel we should do that.
Okay. Okay. Well, I do have one from Joe in LA, and it's to do with examples of words and names that we use to describe the spirit world and, you know, all of the etheric situations that we talk about. I mean, I know we call it the spirit world. Do you call it the spirit world where you are?
An interesting point, dear friend. Yes, we rather call it the alter body universe.
Alter body universe.
Yes.
Does everybody call it that?
Very much, yes. The alter body universe, simply because it is non-physical. However, it combines physicalities at various times, in various situations of memory, and using consciousness of previous physical life, or consciousness of the spirit. You see?
Yeah, okay.
So that is why.
Okay. So, and other people just, I mean, you being scientists and in service to, in maybe a different way, being guides and that sort of thing.
Yes.
That would be a common thing that you would hear in the halls of learning or whatever, the alter body universe.
Yes.
I suppose it is a bit of a mouthful, isn't it, to use here?
Well, yes, quite so. So we just rather call it the spirit world. However, even in that respect, you see, there are many different connotations of, in a sense, of different kinds of reasonings that some human beings have of what spirit is.
Mm.
For example, when a person has been of physical life and that they may have seen or been gleaned to have obtained some kind of energy shard or understanding of their spirit makeup and perhaps have taken a long time over their physical life in trying to understand the mechanics of the universe and the whole of the alter body state, if you like, that what then tends to happen is that people will say that person, when they have transpired to the spirit world and then maybe come back as perhaps a message or come back as maybe even a helper to someone, they would call them a light body, reincarnated as a light body.
So you mean that they are helping somebody on
in the physical side of life?
Yes. On this earth plane?
Yes, yes.
But they are actually a spirit guide or something like that?
Yes.
Or a helper?
Yes, but due to the layover, in a sense, of religious empathy and understanding, usually because that person may feel as though they need some kind of religious empathy because they feel frail without it, means that they then have to refer to the spirit entity, shall we say, of one person who makes themselves known, and that person, let's say, knew them whilst they were having their physical life. Mm. They would call them automatically that they had reincarnated as a light body, you see, to make it, in a sense, spiritually acceptable, because knowing that person was perhaps moving through a spiritual paradigm in a sense of their journey, their physicality journey, and they had spiritual excess about their knowledge and understanding of their pathway and who they were going to be, maybe they passed with no fear. You see?
Lots of people's doorkeepers would be considered
reincarnated light bodies.
Yes, as you say.
Yes, 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 I understand that. But as I say, in a sense, so it's like, in a sense, I suppose, catching up with modern vernacular of people's understanding or what they construe as understanding simply because they read about it in some book or other.
If somebody wanted to be a doorkeeper or a gatekeeper, which
yes.
is the person that the spirit being that spends the whole cycle of your life, whoever they're
yes.
with,
yes.
with them,
yes.
From beginning to end as
yes.
as a witness.
Yes.
So if they wanted to go to be a good doorkeeper, would they say, "I want to be a doorkeeper," or is there another word for that?
No, that is what they would say, but that isn't something that they can do because of their wish of it.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't work like that. In order to be a doorkeeper, you have to graduate your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so not everyone can be a doorkeeper. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have a murderer, for example.
No.
Or someone who took any other form of life. Mm-hmm. Purpose for their own gratification of fun or some kind of spurious empathy. You see?
Mm, yeah, sure. Okay, well.
So I hope you understand that.
Yeah.
So, because oftentimes the light body worker, in a sense, or light body, reincarnated as a light body, is usually in reference to people who refer to themselves as light workers, you see, which is then in the ascended master syndrome and everything that is befallen to do with their status and their feeling of self-importance.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes we view these different kinds of situations and similarities mainly because they come from some self-positioning or some feelings of understanding that they have beyond other people. I understand this because there are many people on the physical side of life, for example, who are complete idiots and that they don't think of anything at all, except perhaps eating, sleeping, and all of the other bodily functions that they do. But that doesn't mean to say that they are idiots for another kind of reason. It doesn't mean to say that a person who is low of mind is necessarily an evil person or a person who is negative or deeply distrusting. So therefore, it tends to be that the situation that people place upon others in a sort of a downgrading their energy or extending their life into negativity is usually because of their observation of judgment that they have about that person. They may not even know them, may never have even met them. So part of the problem and the issue that we tend to have with human beings is because they are so shallow and so in a sense, that they do not understand the flagrancies by which they dictate to one another their occurrences of life, it appears to be that people are very ready to put one another in holes, in negativity, simply because they want to be better than them.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, you're not saying that all human beings are shallow, though.
No, I am not. Not all, no.
No. It's, I mean, but it's a human trait, you mean, from the point of not growing spiritually and becoming aware of your spirit?
It is a human trait, even if you grow spiritually, or you feel that you do, you see? And that is part of the condition, in a sense, that many people inadvertently carry with them because of attitude. Attitude is something else in a sense to do with how human beings are reliant upon one another, look for guidance from one another. Guidance is very well and good. I am all for guidance. And in many respects, people do not have to hold themselves up falsely in order to give guidance, purely and simply by the words uttered or created, guidance comes, you see.
But aren't we limited by our human brain?
Well, only if the limitation is there in and implied, I would have to say. That is part of the situation that tends to happen when you have a truthful state, perhaps, of not interference, but union with or association with someone or another being or some kind of influence of other state, which is ultra from your present knowing or your present physicality dimension.
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
And that's like saying as well, my dear friend, if one person actually doesn't read very much, let's say, for example, and yet they have knowledge beyond themselves, obviously something else is at work. So it means to say that what they're bringing in to their, through their senses, through their eyes, through their ears, simply by the not rehashing of information, but the collection of it, the collation of it, of information coming into their life, means that in itself can bring about a much broader aspect and landscape of how that person thinks and feels.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, what we tend to do is that we don't trust our own judgments.
And no, that's right.
So we look to other people that we think know more than us. And
yes.
Then we put our idea and our feelings, the conclusions that we've come to, on the back burner because we just don't have self-worth.
Yes, and that, of course, as well, my dear friend, is something that is so typically brought about as well when one person allows other people and their energy to overrule them in different ways as well. So you have all different kinds of little battles going on between different peoples, not necessarily that they are knowing that it's occurring.
Mm. He who shouts loudest, though, often.
Yes, yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, quite so.
So I can see where Joe's coming from. And
absolutely.
You know, the thing is, it is interesting to think that what we've been calling it, because we all call things to do with the spirit world, different names,
yes,
shall we say.
Yes.
That when we get there, we think we know, not only do we think we know how it all goes and that sort of thing,
yes,
with
yes,
the different things
yes,
that we've read from other people, the names are going to be different.
Well, that's quite true, because don't forget that it's not just a place that's occupied by English-speaking peoples.
Absolutely.
But by animals, and animals from all different kinds of planets. And different kinds of animals, some of whom you can communicate with very well, and others that it's very difficult to learn their language of communication, except, of course, that they may telepathize their language, in which case, as soon as it has left their mind, it comes to your mind in the form that is akin to your language.
But I thought that's how it was anyway in the spirit world.
Yes, that's quite true, but not everywhere. No, not everywhere.
Oh, okay.
There can be situations and instances, particularly in perhaps the understanding of dwelling in other dimensions, if you have the right vibration to do that, the right index vibration to do that, the right amount of love or the right kind of energy index that allows you that kind of interaction, means that you would not necessarily understand any of the language or any of the dialect or conversation, might not even hear of it, you see, or understand its vibration, purely and simply because it is so alien.
So, actually, I do have another question here from Hazel in the UK.
Yes, yes.
About animals' communication in the spirit world.
Yes.
Or the alter body universe.
Yes.
To what level can you actually do this, have these conversations, say, with a dog or a horse or whatever, intellectually, shall we say? Can you, for instance, describe certain things that you had to do for the best intention of that pet, if it was a pet? Can you describe in detail when they don't know about money and finances and
yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Power over people's power over you,
yes,
and violence to you, and all of the things that humans have to go through and that dictate
yes,
their lives,
yes,
the control of different things. How do you
put that across?
How do you put that across to your pet?
It is very difficult, and a lot of people think that everything is known by animals and they are completely au fait with it, which is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. However, it is to say that, for example, some animals instinctively know far more than you do, but won't actually put it in that language of complicated structure. That's the point, really. Human beings tend to overcomplicate everything. So it means that the structure of what they're trying to say doesn't mean to say that you would say to a dog, perhaps, let's say that maybe the operation that the dog needs is unaffordable, or maybe it is simply an operation that doesn't exist in that present country.
Yes, or isn't going to work anyway.
Yes,
there is
or
no
isn't going
cure
to work. Yes, yes, quite so. Then you wouldn't have to explicitly say that, because it will be in the expressed language of desire that comes from your beingness, that comes through your spirit. So the animal will already understand as it will be portrayed to it in exacting detail without the use of words.
Yes, Can you go to, can you specialize in learning how to communicate with specific animals in the spirit world so that you can speak their language, their emotion, however you want to put it?
Yes, absolutely so. But that really comes down to also you understanding its behavioral intent. That's not to say that if you understand the behavioral intent of, let's say, a German Shepherd dog, that it's then signatory to all other dogs. It isn't. Because a German Shepherd dog, depending upon where it is from, will actually have a different language structure anyway. I'm talking about if you're trying to communicate with one that's on the physical side of life. If you are communicating with that dog spirit to spirit, it's a different matter, because language then is not the barrier. The barrier may well be your ability to traverse into the dog spirit or to call to the dog spirit, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So it might well be that an intermediary is needed to do that. So in that case, you would have a spirit guide or someone else that will come from your team or from the energy work that you have done as a physical being to enable that to happen.
You see, I know lots of people that can't wait, well, that they can't wait to get to the spirit world after this life because they really don't get on with people at all. They just don't like being around people.
Yeah.
And they want to stay with animals and just be with animals, work with animals, help animals on the spirit side of life.
Yes, I understand that too.
Where they can do that because they will be free of the constraint of the human physical lifestyle that they have to endure.
Yes, here. That is true.
And is that possible?
Yes, it is. But also, what you have to understand is that animals do it the other way around. Animals come to work with you. To help you. You see, the problem with human beings is that they're still thinking in terms of their beingness and their intelligence and everything else, that they're still at the top of the tree when they come to our side of life.
Yeah.
And it is not necessarily the case.
But we can all do our little bit, though, can't we? I see where you're coming from, though. That's a classic trait.
You see, classically, my dear friend, for example, if you wanted to read a book that was created by a dolphin, a human being wouldn't have had to have written the book for the dolphin on behalf of it. It would have written it itself.
Yeah.
Yes, penguins write their own pieces too. So too do rabbits. So too do squirrels and goodness knows how many other creatures.
Okay. Okay, let's just take this call. Hello, John.
Hi, Sylvie. How are you doing?
Hello, John.
Hello, no, John Friend. Hello.
Hi, Gregory.
Hello, Friend. Hello.
This is a great show. People, humans, we have the golden law, the golden rule, and that's basically our system of ethics. But do animals have, like, a general rule of ethics that they all conform to, and it doesn't have a name?
Well, that is very interesting, my dear friend. The animal ethics only really applies in the physical side of life in respect of animal behavior. You must understand that virtually all animals that exist in the physical side of life are either food for something or are going to eat something that's already living. Because that's the kind of being and that is the kind of evolutionary state that it has. When we are referring to animal liaison with one another, different species in the spirit world, different soul group harmonies, different kinds of situation between one group of species and another group of species, we call it quiai.
Quiai.
Yes, we call it quiai. That is a simple approximation of in respect of saying, using English type language. And Kwai is really built because of the four-dimensional state in not in terms of physical dimension, but in terms of the spirit world, in which all spirit beings who have had a physical body, perhaps to do with different kinds of animal races, are actually a part of. So, for example, with human beings, we are a part of a Kwai as well. But it's a different, slightly different structure, because simply because human beings are of a different kind of strata of information and processing ability within the within its memory and also within its spirit. Now, that doesn't mean to say that the spirit of horse or the spirit of dog or cat have a lesser Kwai than for humans. The Kwai index of dog or cat or horse is of a multilingual and multi-tasking basis. So it means that different beings who are of a structure of horse, of that evolutionary status, but actually come from different planets, will have a completely different structure of intellect and also of vocabulary that it had or possessed whilst in physical life. Doesn't mean to say that its spirit was any less or any, in a sense, inadvertent to that of human understanding. So it means that, in a sense, when we are in the spirit world, this Kwai kind of understanding is really to do with not the basis of language, but how beings regard themselves when in their true spirit value.
Oh, that's very interesting, Gregory. So this Kwai is actually something that everybody determines from inside, but it is kind of a collective consciousness as well. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yes, that's absolutely right. And in so, but not to be confused with, for example, if you were, let me see, yes. So if you were, let's say, you were going to talk to a horse that came from Amsterdam, it would speak in Dutch. It's, that would be its foremost language as a physical being. But in actual fact, when it is in its own soul group, then horse actually associates also with the Kwai language of its structure in the spirit world and of its spirit makeup. So that means its beingness is able to transfer its memory from its location when in a physical state and be able to conform that into Kwai language, which is then admissible to all. You see?
I know years ago in physical form we had a universal language called Esperanza.
Yes.
Which was supposed to be one language that everybody could speak, but it never really caught on.
No.
But it sounds like we have something called a Kwai, which does work.
Yes, absolutely so, because it's in thought form. So it means that nobody actually struggles with it, because it comes through, Kwai comes through in a multifaceted way. That means it comes through as pictures, as feeling, emotion, images, as also vibration and light. So the light body will have a certain kind of color. So that means that language structure, when you are talking it, or when you are viewing it or sending it to someone else, telepathically maybe, actually comes through as different color variations, depending on the texture of meaning and emotion behind it. In this way, it means that language has a much deeper structure. It's part of the reason why sometimes when we are doing programs like this, or sometimes when those on our side of life are actually communicating or attempting to communicate with beings in the physical body, sense and presence, actually have difficulty. The Kwai language is all very well, but sometimes it's so complex or can become so deep and meaning that in the physical sense for Earth physical people or even Earth animals, it becomes meaningless simply because the depth does not exist in the physical retention of mind memory or even maybe their attitude toward love. That simply means that beings are unable to process it, unable to see the language or really process or identify how it is formed. It's part of the reason why it is that, let's say then, for example, if you have a person on the physical side of life who says they communicate with animals. Now, for many people who say they communicate with animals, the situation may well be that their animal communication skills primarily, they may come through their doorkeeper, as in the form of Kwe'ai language that is then transferred into human physical derivatives. That means to say the human being then thinks that they're talking to the animal in its own voice. But in actual fact, its language structure is Kwe'ai, but what it's coming through to is English, because it's been transferred by the doorkeeper or by the spirit guide who happens to be working in that facility. Unfortunately, what tends to happen is that human beings then actually find a completely different format as to how they think of themselves and their experiences, and then fail usually to acknowledge the work of the spirit guide who actually happens to be filtering this information through to them. On the alternate position to this, it may well be that there is perhaps a wolf or some other being, maybe a squirrel, a rodent of some kind, or whatever. It could be a whale or a dolphin or even, I understand, some beetles are quite apt to this too, that these actually become, in a sense, an energy guide to that physical being to enable that interpretation to take place. And so then, in a sense, the information is passed through the Kwe'ai language through the structure that being already knows and understands. And because they have worked with that physical being, because they have done the process of development of their structure of integrity and the love energy that is formed through their union, means that, in a sense, there is no barrier, so therefore that the language structure can be easily read and reinterpreted.
Yeah, this is just really fascinating and remarkable. I had never heard of the Kwe'ai before. Sylvie, have you heard it before?
Yes, I have heard it before. Yeah, he has spoken about it before, but not that often. And
no,
it was a while ago, actually. That's why I was...
Yes.
We haven't talked about it for a long time.
No, quite so.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a show in the works just about the Kwe'ai and explaining that more? Because I think I'm starting to understand a little bit, but God, that just like changes my perspective on everything, really, on all of communication. So can we maybe have a show just on Kwe'ai?
Yes, I do understand.
Yeah, if you want to send me a load of questions by email first, John, we can do that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And the point is that Kwe'ai language in this structure, in a sense, comes through with so many different meanings and inferences. For example, the great conversations that happen between different kinds of vertebrate animals, perhaps to do with the structure of what they're about to eat, even if that structure might be vegetable. Because, of course, as you know, or may not know, that all creatures, including those that are spirit or plant, actually have language structure on our side of life. So that's part of the reason why when you come to the spirit world, flowers and different plants actually talk to you, not because they have mouths and larynxes and all the other paraphernalia that you associate with being able to communicate on the physical side of life, but actually through their energy.
This is kind of a strange story, but I know one time I had a cat, and it was rubbing against my ankles, and right away I heard it say, "I need water." And I looked down, and sure enough, its bowl was empty, and I like jumped because I remember I forgot to give it water for a couple of days. But I heard it actually saying those words, "I need water."
Yes, that's right.
And then I gave it water, and it drank like nothing happened. You know, it just drank it, and so it was interesting, the communication.
So how would he? So he could have got that in a few different ways, then, couldn't
yes,
he?
Yes, that's quite right, my friend John. The situation with that, you see, can often be that because of the fact that you weren't expecting it, because of the fact that you were not prepared, meant that you had not erected any blockages, any situations of association of self, which then creates problems in your vibration index. So that meant to say that cat animal was actually speaking through you, to your spirit. Mm. And because your spirit is still in the spirit world, that means the whole Kwai language structure is actually a part of your spirit's intellect and understanding. So that is something that can actually come straight through to you. But what you have in this respect then are that because for many people they actually aren't able to properly let go in the sense of their consciousness to enable communication to really take place, then they may use a kind of a supplicant. As I said, that may be the spirit of another animal, or maybe some other kind of entity or energy, which then facilitates the Kwai language to come through to you. Otherwise, if you actually allow the barrier to simply drop away between your conscious physical state and the aberrations that you place in blockages between yourself and your beautiful spirit, then it will be your spirit that will simply speak to you in, but not really, but the language and structure of the animal itself will speak to you via the Kwai ability of your spirit to transfer it into something that you makes sense to you.
So you were probably actually not particularly thinking of anything at the time.
Yes, that's right,
John. And
absolutely,
you know,
yeah, totally caught me off guard. I happen to be kind of on a kitchen counter.
Yes. And that is exactly the same way, my dear friend, that human beings talk to flies.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many other times, you know, the animals do speak to us, and because we're always thinking, busy.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely so, Ben.
Some of it, what they have to say, might be gibberish. You know, it might not be that important to us. I don't know. But, you know, maybe they're trying to get something across that's important to them, but maybe it wouldn't be that important to us. I don't know.
Well, actually, my dear friend, animals aren't subject to frivolous conversation, unlike human beings. They tend to talk about rather not mundane things, but things that are really important to them. Otherwise, they don't speak.
Mm.
Which is an interesting situation, really. I understand that human beings have only adopted the kind of situation of rambling in communication simply because they have become stifled of a lack of apparatus to enable them to focus.
We don't ramble, do we, John?
No.
I was not meaning that personally, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a really eye-opening conversation. I think it just started something. I mean, incredible topic. So,
okay, well,
so
we'll
much.
See what we can do, and we'll try and get Gregory to give us some stories. Because that's what it's all about. I think examples is just, you know, that is really interesting.
Absolutely so, yeah. Yes, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you've spoken about Kwai before, but it's a wonder you haven't spoken about, you know, mentioned it before. I mean, the thing is, you have mentioned it, but you haven't actually mentioned the word.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's just now and again.
Yes. So. Yes. Really when the subject comes up.
Yeah.
And it's usually associated with some other situation that happens. Like, for example, when situations develop, let's say, a tsunami. And maybe you have one kind of animal that picks up that the tsunami is coming, that it's happening, then, and usually also part of what they pick up is not just the vibration as in a rumble, but what they actually pick up as well is the flexation of the earth, which enables them to understand how big the wave is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit like, in a sense, if you had a plastic plate and you had water at one end of the plastic plate and you were trying to balance it, you would actually find that the weight transfer was different. And that is actually what happens, let's say, for example, with elephants. They are able to tell the size of a wave that is coming from a tsunami simply by the tension that comes through to their feet. And then what they are able to do, because they don't have any blockages to their spirit, and hence the Kwe'a language of their spirit, means that they can then communicate that to everything else, apart from humans, of course, because human beings are not of that vibration, because they have removed themselves away from it. So it means to say that is part of the reason why birds suddenly up sticks and fly away to a certain destination, usually a height above a certain point, and to making sure that they don't get have any sufferance from it. And they, in turn, warn all other animals, insects, or whatever it is, of the impending situation. Insects, you will find, will usually try and grasp onto a tree or something like that.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it?
It is, and it sounds like you're actually communicating with the earth. So my next question is, can inanimate objects communicate with spirit?
Inanimate objects create with communication with spirit. Inanimate objects don't. It is really to do with the energy that is within, upon, or surrounding an inanimate object that allows communication to take place.
Did you have some reason for saying that, John?
Well, because you were saying it was almost like the earth was talking to the elephant's feet, and that's why I was thinking, can rocks talk? Can the water talk? Can...
Oh, I see what you are saying.
Vibrations.
Yes. Situation, really, I was not referring to the earth talking to the elephant. The spirit of earth is of a different kind of vibration and does not actually communicate specifically with one or other entity. I know that a lot of people will be somewhat miffed about that, or may have a different and hostile portents in a different way or variation to do with that. My situation here is purely in regarding the spirit of a planet, which is quite different to that of any other kind of physical being from which has actually become evolved from. So that does not mean to say that the spirit of earth people or earth monkeys or earth gorillas or camels...
No, that's funny you're saying earth monkeys, earth gorillas, because this topic is hitting me. I'm thinking what to say, and all of a sudden you said that. But I saw a video where a cheetah attacked a gorilla or a monkey and killed it. And it was happy, it's got food, it picks it up to go eat it, and all of a sudden it realizes that that monkey had a baby.
Yes.
And you could just feel sorrow from this cheetah. It was like, what did I just do? Other animals came to attack that baby monkey, and that cheetah fought to the death to protect it.
Yes, absolutely.
So I thought that was a very strange blend of communications there, you know, from being fierce to all of a sudden loving.
But that is because of the fact, my dear friend, that the cheetah itself was only purely acting on basic animal instinct. Its instinct was food. It doesn't think in terms of or have language of kill. It doesn't understand that.
But you saying then it wouldn't have done it if it had known that it wouldn't have done it if it
had... No, I am not saying that. But I am saying that whereas it could have quite easily turned round and also eaten the young the young animal as well, from as well as its mother, the point is that the reason why it didn't is because it isn't attacking out of malice. It isn't doing it out of aggression. It is doing it because it doesn't have a knife and fork. It doesn't have a gun. It doesn't possess a bow and arrow or some other implement in order to take its prey.
Yeah, so it didn't actually think, oh, I'm hungry, I have to eat, I've got to kill this animal because I've got to eat it. Oh, but let me just see if it's got a baby or not.
Yes, absolutely, it doesn't go there.
That happened afterwards, though, that it actually felt remorse.
Yes, that is true, but not only that, but it actually felt nurturing. And the nurturing was something which we are saying is pro-instinctive. It's evolutionarily instinctive. So that means to say, in a sense, it's killed the mother because it wants food. The baby is so small, it wouldn't even be a bite size. So it's far better for the animal to then protect the baby because it will be food in the future.
Yes. There was a twist there, wasn't there?
That's been coming.
Well, my dear friend, the point is that, you see, animals, if left to their own devices, always find their mean plateau, their status whereby they are living in equilibrium and harmony. And that is exactly the same as you may even have a situation where a cheetah can actually bed down with antelope or deer or whatever else it is that happens to be close by, and they will all sleep well and in harmony.
But only when they've got a full tummy.
But only when they have a full tummy, yes. Otherwise, they will be on the lookout for the next meal, which is usually one that is weaker.
Mm.
And that is how they catch them, because they're weaker.
Mm.
So the conditions of what you are seeing is that the cheetah itself, when it has come to its prey, isn't thinking in terms of its spirit, because it's not there. It is in terms of food. It is in terms of survival. If it thought in any other way, it wouldn't survive. It doesn't know that eating carrots is something that's an option. You see, they don't actually grow wild where they live. So therefore, it doesn't know. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And that is part of the conditioning that happens within animal survival. Part of the problem for human beings is that they look at animal survival as an instinctive behavior and say, what a travesty, how terrible, then it surely means there cannot possibly be a God or any other energy that is responsible for this. Actually, God isn't responsible for that at all. That's nothing to do with the creation of all life or that aspect of how many human beings feel is in a human endeavor. That means portraying God as being humanistic. That is something that comes from the religious structure of how human beings think of themselves within the animal hierarchy, and in actual fact don't regard themselves as animals at all, but something far beyond that. My point here is that animals, when looking at them instinctively, are something of the traits that human beings continue to succeed in, continue to display, simply because their animalistic behavior is just under the surface. It hasn't been buried deep, that deep at all.
Mm. Wow. Well, hey, John, it's been lovely chatting to you again. Do you still live in Indiana?
Yes, I'm in southern Indiana now. Before I was in northern, but moved down here. So okay. How's things in England?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Yeah. Oh, well, it's been lovely chatting to you again. Do join us another week.
I sure will. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks. Absolutely. God bless the event, John.
Bye.
Thank you so. God bless. Yes.
All right.
Yeah, fascinating. This all started with the examples of words, didn't it?
It did, yes.
Of what you call things in the spirit world.
Yes.
And the thing is, I'd just like to say about the queer eye situation, the thing is we don't, as a group, don't actually usually get into terms and phrases and things that don't really mean anything specifically or are going to help us here on
yes,
the earth plane.
That's right.
We bring information to do with the spirit world and the afterlife and all of that because it's useful information. It can help us to lose fear and all of the other situations. And the knowledge and information is very helpful. So the thing is, that's why you don't normally bring lots of names like that, brandishing them about. But it is interesting to know, even if that's why I've forgotten about it, because we haven't spoken about it that much.
No, and really, because it is such it's not that it's overly complicated, it's just that the spirit world, the whole universe, in a sense, is not compressed into just a few things.
Yeah.
It's a very expansive situation.
Mm. Well, actually, John's right. I mean, that is a whole show, really, talking about
that. Yes.
So that would be helpful if your guys could get some interesting facts for us.
Yes, we will try to do that.
Because I think that, that is fascinating.
Absolutely so, Faith.
Yeah.
Yes. Certainly, little bird.
Okay, yes. Well, that's it then for this week.
Well, very well, then. I understand. I thank you so very much. God bless upon your journey, dear friend, little bird. God bless.
Thank you.
Everyone, yes.
Yep, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for your emails, everybody. Keep them coming in. And thank you, John, for your call. Our website, once again, is www.spirit-teaching.com. And my name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work on the wonderful bbsradio.com. Until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye. Thank you.